is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Wednesday, June 17, 2020. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, and I am working from my home studio north of New York City. Some sad news today before we talk to Clinton Yates and before we talk to Paul Imbecchietti's longtime Giants pitcher, Mike McCormick, who won the Cy Young Award in 1967, has passed away at the age of 81. The Giants say McCormick died Saturday in his home in North Carolina after a long battle with Parkinson's disease. McCormick played 16 years in the majors from 1956 to 1971 with the Giants, Orioles, Senators, Yankees, and Royals. He won 134 games, a 3.73 ERA, and his greatest accomplishments came with the Giants. I have baseball cards of Mike McCormick from when I was a kid. I was seeing yesterday that our old friend John Shea tweeting out that he was a great guy and that other players really liked him. Dr. Anthony Fauci, the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, warned of the potential dangers of letting Major League Baseball go too far into the fall in an interview with the Los Angeles Times. The quote from Dr. Fauci: "If the question is time, I would try to keep it in the core summer months and end it, not with the way we play the World Series, until the end of October. I would avoid that. The virus is one of those things that keeps fooling us," he told Bill Shaken. "Under most circumstances, but we don't know for sure here, viruses do better when the weather starts to get colder and people start spending more time inside as opposed to outside. The community has a greater chance of getting infected. The likelihood, according to Dr. Fauci, is that if you stick to the core summer months, you're better off, even though there is no guarantee." Yankees president Randy Levine issued a statement calling for more negotiations between the players and Major League Baseball. The quote from him is, "The commissioner has assured me he is ready to get into a room and finalize these issues. The players agreed to negotiate them in the March agreement. So let's get everyone in a room now and resolve these issues so we can play ball." Yep, we've been saying that since late March. And we saw many more players tweeting the union's unified message. Tell us when and where. Mike Trout, Bryce Harper, many others chiming in. Now, before we get to Clinton Yates, we need to mention our friends at Shell. Here's a fact for you. Not all synthetic motor oils are created the same. Crude oil is like a bag of mismatched rocks, all different sizes and shapes coming together. Natural gas is more like a bag of marbles, all uniform in size and shape, designed to work together, reducing friction in your engine. That's why when Pennzoil reinvented motor oil, they started with natural gas, not crude. Pennzoil synthetic base oil is 99.5% free from the impurities you'll find in crude oil. So the next time you need to change your oil, remember to ask for Pennzoil synthetic motor oil made from natural gas. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil, based on Sequence IVA wear test using SAE 5W30. Clinton Yates is a columnist for The Undefeated. You see him on Around the Horn. You hear him on ESPN Radio. Clinton, how you doing?
I'm well this morning, Buster. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I want to start with this because when I got up this morning, I saw that Anthony Gwynn, who's the son of Tony Gwynn, tweeted out about the anniversary, the sixth anniversary of the day that his dad passed away in 2014. And he wrote in a tweet, "It really doesn't seem like 6 years." And then he had a broken heart emoji. "Miss you, Pop." And I've always said that, I felt so fortunate as a reporter, as a young reporter covering baseball, to have covered Tony Gwynn. Because, not only was he one of the greatest hitters of all time, 8 batting titles, lifetime average of .338, but he loved to talk the game and he was so insightful. And I just enjoyed those conversations. And the other thing too, Clinton, is like, not only was his information great, but he spoke anecdotally. So yeah, there would be times, like I remember covering the All-Star game, I think it was in 1995 in Pittsburgh, or 94 in Pittsburgh. Tony scored the winning run on a hit by Moises Alou. And it was like Tony narrated my whole story for me. Mm-hmm. Like everything that he saw as he's running around the bases. So I've always felt lucky that I got to cover him and was able to learn so much from him. For you, what's a favorite player you have enjoyed talking with and drew a lot from?
I'm thinking about this now, and the person that first comes to mind is a guy that was one of the most productive pitchers in the history of the game, and people forget that, LaTroy Hawkins. Troy is a guy who was around the game for a period of time that a player like him doesn't normally get to do. Hung around the bigs, I mean, 20 years. He's got through in 1,000 games. He has knowledge about this game like nothing I've ever seen from a dude on the mound. He teaches it. He scouts it. He's kind. He's smart. He's one of those guys that got into the bigs and just did not let up. And he knows how to be a gamer. You know, he's one of those pros that you think about. And you don't consider him a superstar, obviously. But you look at his stats and you're thinking, this dude obviously knew how to pitch. And he obviously had some stuff. You do not hang around the league that long if you're a bum. You know what I'm saying? And now he's still around the game. And he's just one of those dudes that I consider to be one of the smartest minds in baseball. And I'm glad I got to meet him.
The first time that I ever saw him pitch, I'll never forget it. He was pitching in Yankee Stadium against David Cone. And after that game, I remember David Cone talking about how what a difficult time he had because, of course, you know, pitchers, when they work off the rubber, they land with their front foot and they almost between the two of them have to work around each other because, right. You know, one guy might put a hole in one part of the mound and on the apron and another guy's another where. And David was talking about like LaTroy Hawkins, the hole that he dug when he landed, he said it was so big. It was like I had to fill it in every inning.
Guy's got tree trunks for legs and they're super long and it, you know, fueled his fastball and everything else he had. That dude was an athlete and still is one of those guys that just knows how to get it done. Love Troy.
So tell me something that you like, an example of something you gleaned from him.
He was really good at explaining count setups, you know, what he was going to attack a guy with, why he would use the fastball, why he would use the two-seamer, and when in counts he was going to mix dudes up. Because when he got to the relief point of his career, he kind of had to change his approach. And so he became a better pitcher on top of just his stuff. And that's how he ended up around the league for so long, is that, you know, it's not just talent at that point. You got to know how to pitch. And one of the things, like I said, he would do count setups in terms of approaches for guys, always brilliant how he discussed them. And when you watched him go through an AB, he knew it was coming every time because he understood the easiest ways to set dudes up, make sure you got their worst swings, and make sure you got outs. Incredible mind on the mound. Love it.
All right. I feel like in this moment with a labor situation, we can have only one of two outcomes. One is because the players are so unified in this moment, total surrender by the owners where they say, okay, we'll give you whatever, 70 games, 72 games, 65 games, something in that range at 100% salary. And the other alternative to that would be a total war. So it's either total capitulation or total war. What's your read on it?
Oh, man, this is tough. You know, I've been saying for weeks that the owners are losing the PR battle, and it was just going to be a matter of time before the average baseball fan realized this is not okay. We're at that moment. I've believed it for weeks. It's been obvious that the owners have been operating in bad faith in the context of just none of this stuff was going to work. You can't use a pandemic as a bargaining chip. And that's what they did the entire time. All of the money stuff was just a shell game. And ultimately, it became clear you don't want to pay players to play baseball. What is that about? And so for me, now that they've lost the PR battle, I think they're going to go to war. I mean, I really think that they're going to fall back on COVID and say 2020 was a wash anyway, and act as if people are going to forget about the minor leagues, act as if people are going to forget that, you know, Rob said they're going to play and then didn't, and act as if it's going to be easy to get back anyway. It's not. And so they've got to kind of grind in and wait for next year because, I don't know, I mean, at some point people just lose complete faith in the stewards of the game. And at this stage, I think that's where we are. I think people understand losing an entire season might not actually be the worst thing. Coming back with a product that, I don't know, you have unwilling players, you don't necessarily have the same talent level, and the money's all jacked up potentially. That just doesn't seem like something that is going to put out what I would call a major league product. And if ultimately your goal is to save the game, you might have to cut something off in terms of the league right now so you can negotiate this and make sure guys are healthy getting back to the game. This is just too risky on too many levels right now, I think, for the owners to try to jam this down their throats. It doesn't make sense. And if the money's that bad, why would you do it? We're already halfway through June. You know, it's not like we haven't missed a ton anyway, and the season's going to be weird. So for me, unless something drastic changes, they dig in and we don't have baseball till 2021.
I think you're exactly right. You know, people asked, well, I did a bunch of radio hits yesterday, and one of the questions was, how did we get from a point last week when Rob said that it was 100% that we were going to play to what he said to Mike Greenberg the other night, that it's less than 100%? And I said, I think the owners finally realized that they couldn't ram a system down the player's throat because the circumstances are so complicated, and the potential for passive aggressiveness and Ferris Buellering and a lot of ways, for the players to manifest with their feeling, it just wasn't good. It was going to turn into a total circus. But I also think that it really illuminated how Rob is, for lack of a better way to describe it, he's a caddy in this situation.
Yeah.
Like, he's not the guy making the decision. And one of the questions that I was asking of people in baseball yesterday was, okay, who's the owner in the room who's going to go around to the other guy, the other owners, and grab him by the throat, or, you know, grab him by the top of the Zoom call and say, guys, are you out of your minds? Our sport is getting destroyed. We've become a laughing stock in the court of public opinion. The brand is being damaged. We have to make a deal. I must have asked that question yesterday of 10 people, and what I got back mostly, Clinton, was silence. Like, not sure. And I also got back some feedback that some of the owners are on the finance committee, which is really at the central part of the owner's part in decisions being made in this negotiations, that the people with the most energy, and let's face it, that's what it comes down to on a committee, who's going to be the loudest, most aggressive. Right. Those guys are hawks. And it feels like baseball needs that person right now to shake them and say, what are you guys, crazy?
I know there's no Bing Russells in the Portland Mavericks running around town trying to be motivated about the actual game. And I wish there was. That's what's so heartbreaking about this, Buster. It feels like the owners of Major League Baseball teams don't like baseball, because if you did, again, you would not decimate your support system in terms of the minor leagues. You certainly wouldn't put all of the players in a position that could potentially ruin their careers. And if the minor leagues are gone, what are you going to do for players? This is a factor. And on top of that, they're not even understanding that we know the trick. You don't have your books open. You're not operating on the same level playing field. And so for me, it's like, I'm not sure how to convince a rich guy to like something that he doesn't already like. You know, it's very odd to me how obvious this is and how clear and present the danger is to the game. Again, it's not just about the major leagues. It's about everything on down. And if you don't let it happen at the top, and you've already destroyed everything at the bottom. College season is gone. We got youth games coming back. So that's, I mean, something. But the entire foundational structure of how you develop the game is at risk. And if you can't see that as an outsider, I mean, if you can't see that as an insider, when it's obvious to outsiders, what are you doing? You know, there's just a basic level of intellect and interest that I just don't understand. And the only conclusion I can come to is that these guys just don't care. Baseball is not that important to them. It's a business hedge fund situation that they think they can make money out of without having any interest in the game. And that is not possible at all. The money doesn't add up. The interest just isn't there on a national level. It's there regionally, and it's stupid. It was a bad strategy from a PR standpoint. It was a bad strategy from an effectiveness standpoint, and it's blown up in their faces.
All right. When you and I were kids, I don't know if they still have them now, but they had these thing called pop-up dolls where they were sort of fat at the bottom and you could punch them and they would pop back up. That to me was Rob Manfred on social media the last few days with the players. Oh my God, they just took swings. They absolutely hammered him. And as it was playing out, of course, the question becomes, you know, can Rob last with that? And I got to tell you that my thinking on that sort of evolved as yesterday went along, because at the beginning of the day, I was thinking, you know what, if you look at the NBA, and I don't cover the NBA, but you assume that Adam Silver in a tough spot with the players probably has LeBron on speed dial and say, mm-hmm. Okay, tell me what you're thinking. Tell me what you're hearing. Tell me how you guys are feeling about things. That doesn't exist in baseball. The model you want to get to, then yeah, it would be important for Rob to be that person. But you know what? Then as the day went along, I was thinking, nah, baseball's more like with Roger Goodell in the NFL. And I remember there were those years when the players had a lot of disdain, and they still do for Roger Goodell. And he continues, because the bottom line is Rob's an employee of the owners. And as long as they're making money, as long as they're bringing in, as long as he's taking the bullets for them publicly, they're good with him. First off, what do you see in the player's response to Rob, and how important is it for him to be a figure of credibility of the players?
I think the players are over it. I think that this has been in disarray from the jump, and most of these guys knew the chances that they were going to play were lower than not. I hung out with the big leaguer about a week ago for a story, and he said 30 to 40% of the guys he knew, the word he used, Buster, was indifferent about the season. And that tells me all I need to know about what they feel in terms of the faith in the league. That's crazy. 30 to 40% of the guys that a young big leaguer knows, his friends are indifferent. Like, how do we even get to that point? That shows the level of frustration that's happening on the field and in the clubhouses. You can't have that. You can't have the best players in the world disinterested in doing the thing that they love because the business end is so jacked up. Rob doesn't understand that. And it's just not computing how important this is to the overall health of the game. And it's bothering me, not just as a baseball fan, it's bothering me as a sports fan in general, because people tend to side with owners because they don't know any better and they think that players are overpaid, but they don't understand the gambit that they're putting people in. Because it's just a not fair negotiation tactic to basically say, well, we're not playing anyway, so we got to figure this out on that end. We're not playing because it's something that nobody can solve. And if you're going to say that that's a bargaining chip, well, then tell us what the actual money is. You can't just use something that's not fair and then not give up anything you were doing beforehand. You know, it's just, I don't know, man. It's depressing because the one thing I dislike more than anything, Buster, is people trying to insult my intelligence. And that's what it feels like this is. We all know what is happening, and the players are what makes it go. Simple as that. Put them on the field, figure it out, pay them what they deserve, and get the game back on track. It is too late now. The minors are vital here. That doesn't exist. You need these players to be happy in order for your product to be at the highest quality, which is what you're touting to the rest of the world.
Oh, my goodness. You know, when I've done radio hits, I've introduced myself as Dr. Doom because I'm pessimistic. You might be even a little bit more than me.
I mean, it sucks, man, but you know what I'm saying? It's real. It's real, you know, and it bothers me because, like, this was salvageable, but it was never in, it was always in disarray. It was like they never really realized there's one way to fix this, and we have to give it a shot if we are forced to. It's too late. You know, it's going to be chaotic no matter what now. They don't have a choice. And that, to me, is just bad leadership.
What a missed opportunity for baseball, no doubt about it. Clinton, thanks for doing this.
Absolutely, guys. Let's hope something comes back. Good Lord, what a game.
Before we get to Hembo, the world's most popular sports league, the English Premier League, returns to action today. Hear what to expect in the mad dash to finish the season as Mina speaks with Men in Blazers Roger Bennett. That's ESPN Daily. Subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Jumping into the numbers.
After evaluating millions of pieces of data in the blink of an eye, the winner is Cincinnati by 200 points. Why, you worthless hunk of junk.
This is Hembo Knows.
Hembo is Paul Imbakides, the researcher at ESPN. He's a honcho on the show Get Up. He tells us he's a head honcho. We checked with Mike Greenberg, the host, who says that he likes Hembo because Hembo's a wild party guy who he lives through vicariously. Hembo, how you doing this week?
Buster, it is good to hear your voice, as always, although I do wish that the circumstances this week were a tad different. This is, unfortunately, the world that we live in. I'm not sure. I didn't expect when you and I were, you know, talking about this in March that when it come June, we'd be saying the season was unlikely at this point over finances instead of the health, reasons we talked about so much. But I guess that's where we are.
Well, and it may eventually fall apart because of the health thing. That's a funny, you know, they could agree on something and the whole thing could erode. I would say this, at this point, I think there are only two possible outcomes. One, because the players are so unified that it's either total surrender by the owners, something in the range of 65 to 75 games at full pay, or total war, which is no season this year, and it launches a three-year labor war. And if, in fact, you see ownership step forward and make that offer, my first thing would be like, where were you 6 weeks ago? How would you feel?
I would feel the exact same way, because I don't see any reason why we couldn't have settled there 6 weeks ago, unless, as you know, Manfred and others have said, they were super worried about a grievance or something to that effect. But, you know, my hope would be that we can be beyond that, which I would consider very petty. What's curious to me, Buster, is this sort of growing distaste, it seems, that the players are now vocally having towards their commissioner. And that is a very curious thing at this point in the game, because I don't think it's important necessarily for the players to like the person who's running their sport. But I do think that it is vital for the players to respect that person. And I don't get the sense that there is a modicum of respect right now towards Rob Manfred from the players. And if you look at just the other obvious examples around the world of sports, it seems overwhelmingly clear that the NBA and its players and the union have had a very good working relationship with Adam Silver. And it's one that has become so prosperous that baseball players were tweeting at him this week, sort of in jest, because of the incompetence of Rob Manfred. Further, I think you could go as far as to say that Roger Goodell has done a good job in sort of repairing some of the public image issues that he had several years ago, to the point now where he has been sort of a stabilizing force during the pandemic for the NFL. And I think the NFL and its players are going to encounter some financial issues sort of probably sooner than later. I think they'll probably use Major League Baseball as the example of what not to do during that time. But this is obviously a very perilous time. And the biggest concern I have, like you mentioned, is that this is the start of an extremely long process where this is going to be in the headlines every day. And that is going to be really nauseating for me and other baseball fans around the country.
Hembo, I started yesterday thinking, you know what, I don't know how functional it can be if the players have such disdain for Manfred. And it's clear that they do. And I'm hearing that. I've been hearing that now for several weeks. And that has all come flowing out on social media. But then I did think about the NFL. Like, the only thing that matters to the owners is that they're making money and that Rob Manfred's taking bullets for them. And so I think you can get through this moment and they can get through the 2021 labor situation before anyone would seriously talk about replacing Rob.
I think you're probably right. But I think my retort would be, is that Rob Manfred's only job? Is it just to be the mouthpiece for 30 owners, or is it also his job as the commissioner of baseball to act in the best interest of his sport? Because Buster, you can't argue that he's doing both right now. You can only argue that he's doing the former.
Yeah, that went out the door when Faye Vincent was fired back in 1991. Like I think a lot of fans feel that that might be it. I've always thought of the owners basically being, the commissioner basically is a caddy for the 30 owners.
So in your
and
judgment,
to carry their message, he's their employee.
You think Bud Selig would be acting sort of similarly now? Because I have people that come that are telling me, I never thought I would say this, but I'm yearning for the days of Bud Selig. Am I misremembering that? Or do you think, because Rob Manfred was very much his groomed replacement, do you think that if Bud Selig was in charge right now, we would be dealing with the exact same issue this exact same way?
It's possible, but I'd say this, that Bud had been an owner when he went into that job, and he had he came from a different place when it came to his relationships. He was a peer of these guys. Rob has never been a peer. He's never been the billionaire. He's right. The guy who was hired. He's been hired. If, in fact, it would have played out differently if you had Bud, who was so good at building consensus, and he had little individual deals. You know, he was like the great senator back in the day who would be the great deal maker, like Lyndon Johnson was when he was a senator. He could pull things together. And I don't know if Rob's been able to do that in this critical moment.
Yeah, you wrote a column about it over the weekend, but winning at all costs is sort of the mantra in baseball right now. And unfortunately, it seems that Rob Manfred and the collection of owners that he is speaking to. And I very much believe that we are not at a point where all 30 of these guys want to come back. And I think that is being misrepresented. Buster, you've been saying it for a while. It is clear, and it's abundantly clear, that there is a contingent, at least a small one, of owners that do not want to play baseball this season because they are protecting their bottom line. I think that's become obvious. I don't know that all fans are there yet, but I think it's pretty fair and safe to say that I'm comfortable saying that.
All right. So as this plays out, I think, and I hear from a lot of the rank and file players where they ask questions, hearing from agents, hearing from team officials, what do you hear? What do you know? And I'm thinking about individual players who've been hurt by this particular situation in this particular moment. Let me give you two. George Springer of the Astros should have been a free agent last fall, had his service time manipulated. This whole situation is costing him tens of millions of dollars. And I think of Jake Odorizzi, who's one of, a guy we had on the podcast last year. Loved talking with him. He's so insightful. Someone who had his best year of his career last year, 3.51 ERA, made an all-star team. And he was almost going to double his career pay this year because he took a qualifying offer from the Minnesota Twins. And these guys' careers are so short. This is a window of opportunity that's closing for Jake, and I feel terrible for him. What about for you?
Those are both really good examples, and I think for them, the financial piece rings loudly as the biggest reason why this season is going to negatively affect them. Buster, you know I'm sort of a pseudo-historian when it comes to baseball, so when I think about the season being compromised, if not eliminated, I think about the record book, and I think about Albert Pujols. He's made a ton of money in his career,
yeah.
But he turned 40 in January. Buster, he sits 4 home runs behind Willie Mays for 5th on the all-time list. He sits 11 RBI behind Alex Rodriguez for 2nd on the all-time list and would have likely passed Nat Lajoie, Eddie Murray, and Willie Mays on the all-time hits list with a full and healthy season. He has 1 year and $30 million remaining on that contract. He said last month to our Eldon Gonzalez that he wants to keep playing, that he'd like to keep playing. But, you know, at this point, at this juncture in his career, and with how, you know, and how front offices operate these days, we might never see Albert Pujols on a baseball field again. And if his career and his opportunity to ascend on those all-time lists is compromised because of this, as a baseball fan, that's going to be sad. And that strikes me as an obviously another consequence of this whole ordeal.
All right, Hembo, thanks for doing this. Good to talk with you.
Later, boys. Hopefully we'll be doing it on better terms next week.
Here's Tim Kirchen's Baseball Minute about Ted Williams.
On this date in 1960, Ted Williams hit home run number 500. If not for 3 full seasons and 2 partial seasons lost to military service, 500 would have been 600 and maybe 700. Williams is, after Babe Ruth, for me, the greatest hitter of all time. He won 2 MVPs, and in 2 other years, he won the Triple Crown. He's a lifetime 344 hitter. He hit 388 at age 38, and he's the last man to hit 400 in a season. He has the highest on-base average career of anyone in history, and his career OPS is higher than the best single-season OPS of any active player. 1999, Williams was honored at the All-Star Game at Fenway Park. Those All-Stars revered him. They were intimidated by him, but most would agree, if he played today, he would have been the best hitter on the field. I grew up to stories of Ted Williams from my father. And in 1982, I went to Old Timers Day at Fenway Park. And when Ted came out of the dugout, the entire ballpark went quiet. When he stepped into the cage, age 63, he dug in just like my dad told me. He had the same stance he had in 1941. And then the first pitch he saw, he hit a line drive that went into the bullpen in right center field on one hop, and I was 10 feet from the batting cage. I called my dad and I said, "Pop, I just saw Ted Williams hit," and it was breathtaking.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Wednesday. First up, Mike Frost writes in at Mike Detroit Lions guy. Unfortunate for him. He's thrown a little bit of a conspiracy theory at us. He says, owners have known full well for a long time they're not playing baseball this year. Where are they going to hold spring training to? Florida, Arizona, aka COVID Central. He thinks they've got some fund or insurance they can dip into for a work stoppage. They're not covered against a pandemic. Is that possible? Any kind of secret slush fund do you think they got in the shadows there, Buster?
I got to say that a lot of the conspiracy theories about the owners and how they're handling things are ascribing to the owners a higher level of common sense than what we've seen so far. Let me answer it that way. No, I'm not buying into that. The one thing I would say is I agree with you that, you know, we're spending so much time talking about the financial issues. And if they can work out the financial issues, then they'll probably work out the health and safety protocol. But everybody you talk to acknowledges, yeah, and then the whole thing could derail. Like, they could get started up and you could see a couple of hot spots with a couple teams, and then the whole thing falls apart. And which is, it feels like every day they're just new developments. We just don't know how it's going to turn out.
Alrighty, next one up, Ryan J. Southworth at Ryan J. Southworth writes in, love the podcast. Why don't players just strike now and get the messy CBA negotiation started? Wouldn't that lessen the damage already killing a mutilated season, costing them already reduced salaries, etc., while saving future seasons? How about that for a bargaining tactic?
Because in the agreement that they have, there's a no strike clause, and they would be in violation of their current agreement. I don't think the strike would come into play. Potential for a strike or a lockout is going to come into play until 2021.
Got it. Real Camp Drew writes in, hey, Buster, let's forget about labor negotiations for 1 second and figure out who would win a one-on-one home run derby between Aaron Judge and Cody Bellinger. Who you got?
Yeah, Drew, and I appreciate your sentiment, too. It's why, you know, when Taylor and I were sort of designing the podcast in late March and into April and well into May, and Taylor will back me up on this, we talked about this. Like, people do not want to hear about this day after day, which is why we went into storytelling mode. So if you have some weariness about this day after day conversation, I agree with you. I know Taylor does, too.
Oh, yeah. It's been a grind here. You didn't answer the question. Who is it, Aaron Judge or Cody Bellinger?
Aaron Judge. It's not close.
Wow.
You know, Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge won the home run derby. I remember the next day after he won, talking with Joey Votto around the batting cage. And he said, I don't think people understand how hard it is what he did. Remember, the home run derby that he won was down in Miami. And the distances were just crazy there, of course. And, you know, and so he was talking about that. Like, you see where he was hitting the ball going opposite field in that ballpark. He was astounded by the show that Judge put on.
Last one for today for moi. Jesse Pruitt asks, I heard you mention EPL on yesterday's Baseball Tonight podcast. I love it. Are you a fan of a team? And if so, who? I am a West Ham guy and baseball fans. I'm not going to make this a soccer podcast, but today the Premier League is back. I'm excited.
Okay, so here's the deal. I just wanted to be sure that we're referring to the same thing, and I looked up EPL, and you know what the first thing that popped up was?
What is it?
Eastern Premier League, which would be cricket in Scotland. And we had that conversation last week about cricket. So I just want to – you're talking about the English Premier League, yes?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what's your favorite team?
I'm a big fan of West Ham United.
Okay.
Yeah, in London. Mostly because of the movie Green Street Hooligans. I watched that a bunch when I was younger and then went to see a match there in England when I was studying abroad. So,
I will have it on in the background today. I can't say that I have a particular team.
All right. We'll warm you up, Buster. It doesn't look like we're going to have baseball, so you got to have something to watch. That's it for Bleacher Tweets. Thanks, everyone.
And that's it for today. My thanks to Clinton, to Hembo, and to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. And remember, hate and inequality based on race is something that we should fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.